Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
So here's the word on the street. Nature is hot. Get into doing movies, documentaries, animated films about the Earth and animals. They're showing Al Gore's inconvenient truth on airlines these days. And in the industry, you have to give people what they want. And what they want right now is a real world vision of hope, health, and wonder. Global warming isn't just about weather, because global media is heating up. You'll see. Just stay tuned. It seems as if nature and the environment is increasing in popularity as a medium around the world. And nothing can speak more to that than the upcoming 5th Annual 2007 Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival that's happening in Nevada City, California. It's an extraordinary collection of filmmakers and videographers and people involved in nature and environmental media. And joining us now from Half Moon Bay in California, outside of San Francisco, is Stephen Michelson, who is the executive producer of Lobitos Creek Ranch, which is a production facility that really focuses on many different media. But he's going to be showing and discussing some of his work at the festival. Steve, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
You've been involved in film and production for a very long time, 30 years and more, and now you have your own studio. First of all, talk about Lobitos Creek Ranch. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I'm actually from a four-generation media family. My father was one of the country's first radio producers and sound recordists, and he represented Walt Disney and handled international distribution, was one of the pioneers in that whole area. So I grew up in the media. My grandfather even was involved, even before him, distributing the RCA phonograph discs when they first came out. So media was pretty much in the blood as a child and never really had any thoughts of doing anything other than that. Although I never really was interested in distribution. I was much more interested in the fun stuff as a kid. We would go out and record sound effects. Our family created what is the center of the CBS sound effects library. It was the world's largest sound effects library in its day in the 60s. So I moved here to San Francisco and started a company called OnePass, and it just in the early mid-70s, and it became one of the country's largest post-production companies, expanded to New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Boston, and really was way more than I ever thought I had ever intended on doing. It was like a tiger that I had by the tail that I couldn't let go of. And I sold that company to a publishing company, printing company, in the late 80s and started making my own films and building my own studio here at Lobitos Creek Ranch, which is a 70-acre, people call it Skywalker, for people who don't have budgets of $40 million or more. And it's a wonderful place for creative projects. We specialize in documentaries and special interest programming.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, that's what we like to do. That's what San Francisco Bay Area is extremely well known for, and there's a tremendous amount of talent here.
That's true. It's a progressive area, and as you say, there's great stories that come from there that you perhaps don't come from other places. Something about the soul of San Francisco, perhaps it's the environment in which you all live.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, Sydney, because most people don't know that San Francisco has the country's largest enclave of documentary filmmakers, at least people who say there that that's what they do for a living. Sometimes it may take 5 or 6 years to make a film, and those are the kinds of films that we are most interested in because it shows a level of passion and commitment on the filmmaker's side that you rarely see from Hollywood.
You've been involved in documentary films. Give us a sense of some of the arenas that you've explored.
You know, documentaries tend to take on topics that are just not handled in our traditional media. Just at the Wild and Scenic Festival alone, we have three projects which we'll be showcasing there. The series that we have produced ourselves called Forever Wild is a series on wilderness and the history of wilderness in America, something which we feel is really going to start to gain traction with the Democratic Congress now. Also, a wonderful film by filmmaker Jay Wood called Crude Impact is a documentary story about peak oil and the history of oil in our economy and our nation and all over the world. The impact of oil hasn't really been put together quite like this to see how all these aspects of population, food production, and all the other environmental aspects of oil on native peoples in South America and Africa. It's all kind of there in one 90-minute showing. You now know everything you need to know to take action. It won the best environmental film at the Artivist Film Festival in Los Angeles about a month ago. So, you know, it's being noticed quite extensively.
And your third one is?
The third project we've been involved with more on our DVD authoring and toolkit sides. One of the areas we specialize in, which we'll talk about in a minute, I expect, because we'll be giving a whole workshop at the Wild and Scenic Festival about toolkits and sort of what happens besides just watching the documentary. How do you involve people?
That'll be a great resource for people interested in expanding out this media, which is so critical right now.
Yes, and so the third film is called Discover Hetch Hetchy by filmmaker David Vassar, and it includes one of our toolkits that's being promoted by the Environmental Defense Fund, which is one of the sponsors, the sponsor of the film. Harrison Ford is involved, and it's an effort to remove the Hetch Hetchy Dam and restore Hetch Hetchy as a national park, a sister park with Yosemite. So it's a marvelous environmental project. It has an amazing story behind it, and it's quite an interesting proposition.
Let's start first of all with your Forever Wild series. It has kind of an interesting history and is actually a series of different episodes. Talk about Forever Wild, how it started, what kind of happened to it, and why it's coming back now.
Well, Forever Wild was originally developed by U.S. News and World Report, whom we are now partners with in the creation of U.S. News Productions, which is an amazing new development for us. U.S. News, for those who don't know it, is the 12th largest publisher in the United States. They have 11 million readers. They have one of the most active websites in the country. Over 30 million unique users visit that website. And so they were the ones who initially commissioned this project, and we sold it originally to the Disney Channel. It was going to compete with National Geographic Explorer as family viewing. There are 6 episodes planned of 6 of our best national parks: Yellowstone, Yosemite, the Grand Canyon, the Everglades, which most people don't know that story, the Adirondacks, which were actually one of the very first places where wilderness came to be in America, and also the Cape Cod National Seashore. And we recruited Roderick Nash, a legend in environmental history. He wrote the book. It's the best-selling book of by Yale University Press called Wilderness and the American Mind. It's the Bible of the environmental history subject in this country. And he's the host of the film, all of them, tying them all together.
He's a grand historian. I've actually interviewed him on the show.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yes, he is quite an amazing guy. And we brought together people like David Brower, who will be shown in the Yosemite episode at Wild and Scenic, and Martin Litton, who's still living and is an environmental legend, who along with Brower, pretty much saved the Grand Canyon from becoming a series of lakes. And quite a few others, and you learn the history of these heroes who literally saved these precious places and created what we now know as our national parks, and the story of how America discovered this along with these explorations is an amazing story of pride and for the country and kind of combined art and photography and kind of thing that, you know, we just don't seem to do very much anymore of.
Well, and of course, the legacy of wilderness is truly embedded in the history of America in terms of our ethos and our own identity. And the creation of national parks has such a role in defining who we are. And so I really can appreciate your effort here. Are these half-hour series?
They're all 1 hours.
Wow.
So it's 6 one-hour episodes.
And so you interweave what, historic film and interviews as well with video interpretations of the parks themselves?
Well, Ted Danson is the narrator of this. Ted Danson, most people also don't know, he's a well-known Hollywood actor, but he's also the founder and very committed environmentalist of originally called the American Oceans Campaign, and now has a new name. And he is a terrific narrator who kind of spins the whole story. And we do interview a number of people, but the hero of these films are the parks themselves. They're all shot in beautiful 35mm time-lapse photography, and mostly all of it was shot on film. We do have historical footage. When you learn about the history of our government and development, it's quite a, you know, Marion Stone Douglas, who was the woman who put the Everglades on the map. You know, she fought a courageous battle, and she was recognized by President Clinton in the 90s for her work. So you really learn this history of what it took to create a national park.
Mm-hmm. At the film festival itself, you're going to be focusing on the Yosemite episode, and which is one of six. Yosemite, of course, was one of the cornerstones of the national park system. When will this be showing at the film festival?
It's going to be in the Great Hall on Saturday the 13th, I think it's 8 o'clock, at the Great Hall. And really looking forward to that, and hopefully a lot of people will show up to enjoy it.
Just in terms of the future of Forever Wild, what are the venues where this will be showing in the future?
It's going to be playing around film festivals, different film festivals around the country for the next year and a half, and then we're expecting to place the entire series on public television. We have quite a number of underwriters lining up to help present it, many of whom are connected with U.S. News and World Report. We have brought the Sierra Club into quite a few of our projects, and so they are helping us to distribute these films as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we also expect that it will be on Link TV as a special program that kicks off their programming this spring. One of the unique things about it is that we're planning on, with the DVD set that will be available, providing people with the opportunity, if they buy the whole set, where they'll get an Eagle Pass so they can actually, for free.
Great, so, that's fabulous. Which is a pass to the National Park System.
Exactly, it lasts for the whole year. So as you, you know, all of our projects, Sydney, are more than just films. We try to create campaigns and what we call event programming, because, you know, making a film these days can be a disappointing process. It's really, if you're going to make a film, you might as well do all the rest of the things that are necessary to really get the word and get that whole experience out there.
Now, of course, another one of the films that you're really featuring is Crude Impact, which is so timely right now.
Yeah.
And it's a story that needs to be told, and also to create a vision of what our future, what we're really facing, and it's a problem that many people aren't really willing to take a serious look at. Sounds like you've done something here that's important.
Yes, Crude Impact is an extraordinary film by producer-director Jay Wood. It's Jay's first film. He was a high-tech guy and more or less came to filmmaking through a passion and a trip he took to South America with a group called Pachamama Alliance. And on that trip, he really saw the devastation that was being spread by, you know, the world's oil companies, and decided to do something about it. And he had the means to do so, and he read every book on the subject. He's really, you know, someone who does his research and his homework, and he put together some amazing facts and information all in one place. One of the premier books is called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight by Tom Hartman, who's featured in the film. People like Amy Goodman and a number of other authors, Richard Heinberg, are in this film. So you get the sense of what everyone is concerned about, and you see all the way back when originally peak oil was projected in the United States in the early 70s, and now it's being projected for the rest of the world, which is, it's 2007 is the year when the world's oil supply is going to be diminishing from here on out. So You witness the devastation that's been extracted on native peoples where oil has been discovered, and you come away. Our tagline for the film is, it's worse than you think, but it's not too late. We do have an optimistic view on what can be done and how things can be turned around, but it doesn't happen by being a couch potato, that's for sure. People have to initiate an awful lot of change in order for us to, you know, move forward from this dilemma. And we are, as a project, going to be initiating a campaign and providing a toolkit for people on our website, crudeimpact.com, and also through the Sierra Club and a number of other affiliate and alliances that we're creating.
Do you know when that's going to be showing?
That will be on Friday night. And at the Nevada Theater at also, I think, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the focus, by the way, of Crude Impact primarily from the perspective of South America? Because that's interesting. We don't usually think of oil and its impact in South America. That's not something that's on our radar screen as Americans.
Well, you know, there's quite a lot of oil that's come out of the Ecuadorian rainforests. And so there's quite an impassioned story there. But there's an equally powerful story about Ken Sarawiwa, who was the legendary Ohlone tribe member who led the fight against shale oil in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is another example of how oil has impacted some of these continents. It's where we get the oil and what we've done to the places where the oil has come from.
You know, you're the executive producer of this, which means you have to go out and get the money. And when it comes to a film like this, I'm just curious, how do you find sources? You know, the oil industries and the industry is so well-funded. Where do you find the funding for a film like this?
Well, it's a very good question, and that's the question that always seems to come up. In this particular case, the film was self-funded by the filmmaker for the large part, but pretty much we're now looking for funds for the outreach and for the distribution and the marketing and the whole process that I was just describing of creating an event around it. We're going to be in 150 venues with the Sierra Club's Energy Tour.
That's a great idea.
Energy Film Festival. So we'll get the word out that way. We're going to be raising money from sponsors and underwriters, corporations, nonprofits, individual philanthropists. People literally make contributions to these kinds of projects. School kids make contributions to these projects because they're so concerned about what they learn from them and want us to help spread the word. It's really what our toolkits are all about, Sydney. We have a view here at Libidos Creek Ranch that you have to create what's now being called the engaged viewer. Everyone's searching for who is and what is the engaged viewer. And so our definition of that is you've got to entertain people with an award-winning film. That's never going away. But once you've done that, you have to engage them with other information, mostly internet-based, web-based, and DVD-ROM-based information that we have residing on the DVD with the film. And along with that, you have to give them the third part of this technique, which is the ability to act. And they may act by contacting their congressman. We give them a website where they can even find out who their congressman is. We give them letters that are already pre-written. We make it very easy and convenient for people to do things if they're motivated to. And what we're finding is that the results from our projects is extraordinary.
So if I have this correct, what you're saying, because I know that you love the concept of DVDs, and so do I. What a powerful, powerful tool. The toolkit really is in the form of a DVD?
It's on the DVD-ROM sector of the DVD.
Right.
There are three types of DVDs. Mm-hmm. Most people are familiar with one type, which is called a title. But the other two types, there's a template and a toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
And we specialize in both of those two. But the toolkits especially provide a very rich place where you can store an enormous amount of content and web links and information. We put posters, for instance, that are made in Microsoft Word so people can customize the posters. And we encourage people to have screenings of these films, house parties, and we give them all the tools that are necessary. You know, if someone asks themselves after seeing a movie like this, well, what can I do? Everyone asks that question, and most of the time it goes unanswered. But we don't allow that to happen. We say, well, if you like this film, then show it to your friends and family and invite people to your home. We give them all the tools for discussion guides, for posters that they can put up at their school or church. So we're talking about getting people to be activists and do things.
I love that concept. That is so revolutionary in terms of, because, you know, distribution and how do you get all this information and where do you go to get it, it's all really contained on that DVD. It's sort of like getting a DVD and looking at the bonus features on the on a movie DVD.
We have the bonus features, mm-hmm. but we also have all the rest of the information that you'd ever possibly want to know. You could spend 8 or 10 hours on some of our DVDs, you know, just exploring the information that we provide.
It's a real model. That's why you're trying to really help people understand how this works.
Yes. The Benchmark, which premiered at Wild and Scenic a few years ago, a film we co-produced called Oil on Ice, about the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the fight up there to preserve it as wilderness or to drill, really set the tone for that whole toolkit approach.
Well, Steve, I wish we had a lot more time to talk about all of this, particularly the toolkit. Maybe we'll have a chance to go in depth on some of that in the future here. But unfortunately, we're out of time. We're talking with Steve Michelson, who is the executive producer of many different things, including some movies that will be featured at the Wild and Scenic Environmental Film Festival, including Forever Wild series, which is a personal love affair that he has produced. But as well, he's the executive producer of Crude Impact, and you're putting on this workshop with a toolkit. When is that happening?
That happens on Saturday, and it's about midday.
Now, Steve, if people want to find out more about your work and your studio, tell them how to get there.
You can get in touch with us through our website, which is www.lobitos.com.
Steve, thanks so much for adding your voice. The wonders of science and technology are providing us the tools to bring the world's wonders to life through film, video, streaming media, and now its own TV station. Channel G TV is coming up. Don't change that channel.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.